Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, and before we begin the show, the show sucks.
Whoa, wow.
It's garbage. It's really bad.
Yeah, because like most people just listen it to it in their ear holes. And we do a live stream thing, and there's a YouTube thing somewhere, but to be able to watch a face move with words at the same time. But also, you want to watch it on the big screen, but you can't. You can't get any of that. And I wish there was a way for somebody just to get, I don't know, just one of us on a large screen TV in front of, you know, the family could gather around and get a decent hour or two, not like super late or whatever, and be entertained by it. But that's Justin, who you heard before, Justin Robert Young. And then,
well, you know, the other thing is that, like, you know, we've only been doing this show for a little while. Like, what I would like on the big screen is a proven franchise that has delighted millions and millions of people, brought to a bigger stage and a level. And that's something that we're, I mean, obviously not qualified for.
I can't do this, Justin. Do you got it?
Hey guys, Brian Brushwood here.
I'm out on that. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm out. You're out. So I guess that's just not going to happen.
I've got a plan that just might work, fellas.
It's a pity. It's a pity. So anyhow, let's get it.
I'm here. I live.
Brian, you're still doing this show?
Yes, because I'm still here.
I heard in the Hollyweird that you'd moved on because apparently you're going to be on television, Brian.
Yes. Okay. Look, we made Scam School into a TV show. We talked about this on Weird Things. We're saying it again on After Things because it has a very strange time slot. It is 8 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time, 5 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time, on the Science Channel on Saturday, June 24th. Set your DVR. Do it right now. Don't say you're going to do it later. Do it right this minute. Set your DVR, because those numbers matter.
You may have to look for the time slot, not Brian Brushwood.
Yeah.
The information probably is not in any system yet.
Correct. Correct. Although I think you might be able to find it if you search Scam School. They're feeding all that in now. It's moving very, very fast. And so please, we want to rock the boat on this one so we could do a lot more.
June 24th, 8 a.m. Eastern time. It is on one feed, so that would be 5 p.m. Pacific time, 6 Mountain, 7 Central.
A.M. Saturday morning cartoons.
Science Channel.
Scam School.
Not the math channel. Not the history channel.
Not the pseudoscience channel.
Not the gym channel. Science.
Not the homeroom channel. We talked about that. That's another show in the works.
Yeah.
Yes, set your DVRs. All right, PSA over. Thank you.
Yeah. Logo's Brian's new Babadook show that he's in development for.
Gentlemen, we got a question here from Blair Slavin, which is really a very interesting point he brings up. Is, hey guys, I'm currently in the middle of this book, Deep Work by Cal Newport, pick attached, that I heard recommended by the podcast You Need a Budget. They talk about new career directions and how people are not able to accomplish a lot of their goals due to their losing the ability to focus due to easy, low-impact distractions on their time and memory and concentration. So this might be more for your After Things discussion on how to improve concentration so you can accomplish your business long-term goals. Something I really find difficult to do myself. Perhaps you can talk about how you keep yourself on track and distractions to a minimum of not totally shut out. Synopsis, the deep work hypothesis, the ability to perform deep work is becoming extremely rare at exactly the time it is becoming increasingly valuable in our economy. As a consequence, the few who cultivate this skill and then make it the core of their working life will thrive.
I definitely agree with all of this. And it's really weird because I can't tell. I think all of us would say that we don't do as much deep work as we would like to, right? We should.
Maybe Brian. I think Andrew is kind of constantly hip deep.
But that's my point. Is that From the outside, everyone would agree that all three of us are extremely busy, always doing productive stuff. On the inside, sure. I will wager all three of us really feel like we're sort of goofing around and not doing the as much deep work as we should.
I don't know how to answer that because I always feel like I need to be doing more, but I would say that I'm a guy who just spent the last 72 hours deep in iOS development learning this.
Yeah.
And I went once to go see Wonder Woman, and I made myself go see it because I said, if I sit here in front of the computer and I don't do something like this, my social life will continue to atrophy.
Yeah.
And I would say that when I wanted to learn how to write, I went into deep, deep, deep. You know, I said, I've got to put 5 or 6 years of writing development into 6 months worth of time. When it comes to deep work, I would say that I'm better at it than I was before. And I have to find that balance now because I have that personality. When I say I'm going to learn something, I will go jump into it and I will do nothing but try to learn that thing. And I, an advantage of being single, no obligation, nobody pull me out of, you know, what I'm trying to work on. So I'm in a particular situation where I have the freedom to go jump into these things and I don't have the same responsibilities other people do, but I am a big, big believer in deep work. Yeah, I would say I'd say like part of my problem has been I've been too immersed in some kinds of deep work.
Yeah, no, I would say that Brian, me and you have a personality type that I think is slightly apart from Andrew in that the level of oxygen that Andrew has, in my opinion, as an outside observer of his work, that has kind of supercharged a lot of what he has done is kind of the opposite of I need to concentrate more. It's I need to look at the meta a little bit more and take a break and allow things to breathe on a level that is easy to ignore when you are head down trying to just like chip away, chip away, chip away, chip away. Whereas I think I would agree with you, Brian, that ultimately the time that I most feel that I'm getting a lot done is when I am either completing goals or there is momentum to a project that has already kind of begun and you start to lose time based on how much you're focused on it.
But I think that to the meta point, I agree. I think that the best things in my life have happened from me learning how to do deep work. The best things in my life have happened when I learned to focus, and I didn't have that ability before. I would try something and I would like, it's a little hard, whatever. I'll get back to it later. Hey, let me go do this. Let me do that. And then I have to make a conscious decision now to go into Twitter and say, let me go do something. I'm not pulled there. I don't do that. I make a conscious decision to go into Instagram just to maintain a presence, say hello to my friends. But I don't have on my computer in front of me here. I do not have a chat program. I do not have Facebook installed. I don't have anything in here that, and I was surprised when I got a phone call on the other show. I'm like, I thought I turned that off. I have an environment that is completely distraction free when I need to work on stuff. And that's the problem. And when I talk about writing, I was at UCLA a month ago doing a writing talk, and I was talking about the problem that if you want to write, give up Facebook. And I don't mean forever, but like if you've got a book you need to write, if you vanish for Facebook from 30 days, it won't be the end of your life and you'll get a lot more done because it's an example of one of the many things. That is a system that is designed. It is a $500 billion company that's technology is designed to pull you back in. Whatever way they can get you back in there, whatever way the AI says, I can send them an email, they might trigger this. If I put this person's name in the email heading, if I send them this notification, when they go back into their feed to the check, I'm going to use my algorithm to put this on top to get you in there. We live in an attention economy, and this is what I talked about before. My pick, you know, it's been my consistent pick, is The Attention Merchants by Tim Wu, is that we're now at a point where people are aggressively trying to get at our attention, which they have the right to do, and we give them permission to do this. And that makes deep work hard. It makes deep work really, really hard.
So what's the solution outside of, I mean, the easy thing is like, hey, take this time, set apart these hours, do this. I will admit it's a lot harder to do that now that I got three little girls running around and Bonnie mm-hmm. back in the studio and leaning on me to provide more of the support here at home. It's challenging too because it's very seductive, especially in our line of work, or at least for me, or all three of us. Like we can goof around on Twitter or on Facebook and tell ourselves we're managing our brand, that we are enhancing our relationship with our base, so that when we have a project, we have you know, we have stuff in the emotional bank account that we can motivate people to take actions. For example, I don't know, setting your DVR for Saturday, June 24th at 8 a.m. to record both episodes of the Scam School
Science
Pilots.
Channel. Science Channel. Science Channel.
Science Channel. But ultimately, you're right. Maybe it does in some vague, unclear way support overall what you're doing. But in no universe could you get away with calling that deep work.
Well, I no, that ain't the deep work. But I think that if you're talking about that, you talk about the little distractions. Step one is, you know, is solve that problem, because before you're even going to try to get into deep work, you've got to solve that problem of why do you even can't you even get into it. So I have, you know, I finished a novel that my editor loved and my agent loved and hopefully people will love. I wrote it in a week. I wrote the novel in a week. I only had a week to write it. Okay. How did I write a novel in a week? It was deep work. It was, this is the one particular thing I'm going to focus on. It will be the only thing. I set up my task. My task was, at the end of 7 days, I got to have 80,000 words, ideally a good 80,000 words. What do I need to do? I said, well, for starters, I need to have an outline. You know, I need to have an outline. I have to solve. Let me set up all the things I need to solve this problem. Okay. And so at the end of that 7 days, I'll have done that. I had last week, I had to turn in a script for an hour long show. Okay. I had to turn in an hour long script. I hadn't written a script in years, sat down and said, okay, I need to this is what the finished product will look like. It needs to have these criteria. What do I need going in there to do it? And then that's all I'm going to do for the next 6 hours is just write that. So I lay out what that work is going to be, and then I take out every distraction that's going to pull me away from it. And if I need a break, and I do believe in taking breaks and getting up from what you're doing, because you just, your brain can only handle so much, I make sure that break does not divert me from what I'm trying to do. So I've been learning over the weekend, I've been learning iOS development. And, you know, I get a lot of the fundamentals, but all that all at once hurts my brain. And I'm like, I don't get this. This is a way above, you know, my thinking. And I could either say, yeah, you know, I'll come back to it in a week. I'm like, no, but I can't just sit at the screen and keep doing it for an hour because I won't retain anything.
Can I ask us, because I don't think you're intentionally going to this place, but I know that for me, and I wonder if it's the same way for you, Justin, that the times that I have accessed that deep work state almost exclusively have been when there's no other option. When I am up against deadline, when it's do or die and you go all in on there. And in my mind, it's been a perverse, acknowledgement that procrastination is a pretty good way to make sure you're doing that which absolutely must be done and that you have no time to goof around. It's like, it's not, it never occurs to me when I'm up against deadline to spend any time building my brand on Twitter, air quotes around that.
Well, you know, I would agree. The only thing that I would try to build on top of it is that what I have found is that ultimately, that trigger is not necessarily deadlines, although they are often the most prevalent form of it, but it's letting people down. That's what I really react to. And even if it's the reason why I've tried to find teams. Like, I realize that I'm somebody who works well with teams, because if there is always this element of don't let everybody down, then I will be ahead of the game, because it's easier to motivate me to go from point A to point Z if I know, oh, okay, well, cool. I can get this done and I'll be ahead of the game because I can't let these people down. Right. And that ultimately is what a deadline is usually, right? It's your work crew or your, you know, other people around you, but ultimately, you not doing it will affect other people. And that's something that I know for me was a big revelation.
I would certainly say that as I started having to work with agents and publishers, that helped. But when to get to that point, though, when I first said, I want to write books, the only deadlines I had were self-imposed, but I put those on the whole, do you want to be a flake? Do you just want to be the guy who talks about doing this? Or do you want to do this? And then when I wanted to learn coding, it came into same sort of thing. Like, yeah, do you just want to be a guy like, I have an idea for this. If only I had some magical person who could make this happen for me. And it's like, just become that magical person. Just learn it. I mean, it's hard. It's hard, but it's not, you know, you don't have to be a genius to do this sort of stuff, because a lot of people who are not geniuses are doing these things. It just takes time, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody point out in the chat room says, I wrote virtually all my college papers the day before it was due, and that's been the only thing that works for me. I used to be that guy. I used to be I'm going to do it the night before because it's really good, you know? And then I'm like, hey, you know, when I spent more time on it and then did it, when I spent a week on it but treated it like that deadline, it turned out to be great, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, I certainly did plenty of work at the absolute last minute, but ultimately I had to come to the realization that wasn't my best work. It was passable work, and I got through all of my schooling and much of my adulthood understanding that with very little effort, I could produce C+ work, and that can be a crutch, and I can lie to myself and say that it's really A+ work. But ultimately, I know that, hell, I have a tremendous gift if I can start at C+ and then work up, you know. I think that there is a danger in thinking that, like, well, I got it. Nailed it.
So in concrete advice, my opinion is, one is you got to state what your intended goal is. That is how you know when you're deviating from the goal. If the goal is, yes, I want to spend the next week building up my social media following and doing that, then yeah, it's Twitter, it's Periscope, it's Facebook live stream, it's doing these things, it's guesting, it's doing all sorts of stuff to do that sort of stuff. But that's probably not the goal you're looking at. If your goal is, I want to learn X, I want to do this thing, then you figure out what is a realistic way to do it. And for me, when I was writing, it was, I'm going to take books that I liked and popular books. I'm going to sit there with post-it notes and highlight, and I'm going to break these books down so I technically understand what's going on, because I realized, man, I don't know why I like a lot of books. I have no idea. Most people have no idea because they never stop to think about it. And then same with movies. A lot of people are like, oh, I liked it. And then you break it down and go, oh, this is where the likability came from. This was where it didn't. I had a process. You know, for coding, it was like, okay, I'm not going to become a great coder, but I might be able to work well enough within these things that when I have a harebrained scheme, I could maybe make something that's somewhat usable. And so, like, you know, for example, is like, I've been working on Tiny Shop, and then I'm like, man, I would really like to have an app that goes with Tiny Shop, because I mentioned Tiny Shop and they go, oh, it's very app-like. Are you going to do an app? I'm like, I can either ignore that and say, you know, I'm not hearing that, or I can say, would it make it functionally better?
Yeah. And it almost certainly would. Right.
Yeah. And it, so it's like, and I could go and I could, it's very easy for me to go like, nope, that's the distraction. And it is. But if I want to give it the best chance of success, then learning how to make an app would be helpful. So, and I'm like, all right, how am I going to do that? How did I learn Ruby? I took every beginner course I could, every tutorial, went it over. So I've been doing this, the Team Treehouse course on Swift development, learning Swift. And then I went and helped a friend go shopping on Saturday. I got the app, the Code Swift app, so that while we're out shopping with two friends, I'm in there taking quizzes and stuff and making sure that I'm learning the stuff. So even though I'm out, even though I'm theoretically out, supposed to be hanging out, having fun, there's a lot of downtime when I'm not in a conversation, when they're off doing something, I'm not in a conversation where I can be like, let me quiz myself. Let me make sure that I know this. And so
you know what? I would say, here's my problem is that, kind of like, you know,
your TV show is coming on air.
My problem is that my time slot is very missable. So make sure to set your DVRs. My problem is that much like, you know, your body can tell when you can't afford to get sick, and it will, you know, muscle up, and you could tell your body wants to be sick, but it can't afford to because the show's happening or whatever. And then you could tell yourself, all right, let's keep that white knuckle health. And your body's like, you and I both know you're just going to play games this weekend. I'm going to get sick. I find the same thing with my deadlines. I need some kind of concrete, like, I have to get on the phone with somebody at 6 o'clock on this day and tell him how far I've made it on this project. So I do try to manufacture those moments so that it forces me to decision gates otherwise faster than I might otherwise be tempted to get to them, you know, all things being equal.
Yeah. You know, a technique that I use, and I've mentioned this before, like when I have to do a big task, often, let's say back in the day when, you know, my main source of income was like magic DVDs, was, you know, you'd have to come up with a trick, shoot it, edit it, and all that. But I found out that I could subdivide that into, well, now I got to go hop into Photoshop and work on a cover. Now I got to hop into a Word document or a Google Doc and I can write my copy. And I would go do these other things that were fun and almost gamified, you know, like, oh, let me write a really cool copy. Let me go do this. And I could go back and forth between these different tasks so that when even when I reached my point of I need to go do something else, I'm like, oh, I have something else. And then I could start a project on Friday, and by Monday morning, I could have a DVD, DVD covers, artwork, all this sort of stuff, because the point at which I wanted a distraction, I just used a distraction within the task.
That's actually pretty good. It makes me think of, you know, the phrase, you know, eat the frog. It's like, you know, you got to eat the frog. And so in this way, what you've done is you set up a buffet of frogs to eat. So at any given time, you're in the middle of eating one frog and you're like, man, this really sucks. I'm going to eat this other frog instead. And you're like, oh, this is novel. You know?
Yeah. It's a yellow frog.
Yeah, exactly.
But you do find that you start to you might find that some of those things you actually do enjoy. And I believe in switching parts of the brain. When I'm working on coding and trying to learn this stuff, I'm not a natural. I'm not gifted like other people are. I'm not a guy that's like, oh, it's so easy. And people are like, oh, things are so easy. I'm like, no, like you have no idea how much time I spend trying to learn these things. People are like, oh, writing. You just had such a quick career. Like I spent, you know, my first year nothing but writing and writing over and over and over. I wish it was, you know, it was easy for me. And I think it's just as hard for me as it is for the average person. It's just, I just say, I got nothing else. This is it. So subdivide those tasks. And then if you need distraction, when I'm working on something really hard, if I'm writing and I need that break is not a thing that will divert me. That break is I go for a walk. The phone stays in the pocket. You know, I go for a 15-minute walk, come back, and I start again. And I say, I'm back here in 15 minutes. I open up the work that I got to get done next. And that's a habit I have, too, is where if I'm like, man, I got to go write this today, but I'm going to go eat my lunch. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to open up my Scrivener file, start the document, and do that. So when I sit down in front of my computer, it's like, hello, here we go. So,
yeah,
just thought. Just somebody asked in the chat room, they said, Andrew, for app development, especially for something like your tiny shop, you may want to look into some of the languages that work across both iOS and Android. It's a very, very good point. And that's one of the things where you can start diving into like, should I do this? Should I do that? I use Ruby, whereas Ruby Motion, which is a way to do that. For me, I figured, you know what? It's probably a good idea for me to get in the habit of learning new languages. So I figured I would go learn Swift because Swift is pretty powerful. And granted, it's iOS, although it's now open source, so it can work on other systems. But I said, let me go learn this and also be on the back end of what I'll need to do to make Tiny Shop work with it would serve when I ported to other systems. So it's a very good point, but I think there's a method to my madness. And, you know, man, it's like, you have to step back. You have to step back. And Brian, in your case, I would say you really need to step back and look at like, you may be working things. Maybe you may have a system that actually works really quite well. You do two major podcasts between Scam School and Modern Rogue, which, you know, is amazing. You do all the other regular stuff you do, but also you do Night Attack. Look at the volume of how many hours of content how many hours of content do you create a week? Plus, you manage to do scam stuff. Plus, I don't know if you guys have heard on Science Channel, a week from this Saturday, you can go check out Scam School. It's going to be at 8 a.m. Make sure to record it on our DVR. I think things are working.
And they are. And I don't want to pretend that they're not. But looking back, I've never had this moment of self-reflection. What I've really done is I've set myself up in a wonderful virtuous trap that forces me to partner with all different people. Like everything I do, I have to partner with someone with a salt and pepper beard on because I know that other person will show up when we're supposed to show up and do stuff. And same thing with you know with scam stuff. It's like, you know, we set a release date and the pressure of that deadline forces me to make those calls at that moment.
And I would argue that you're a person that you need to go sit down and go play 15 minutes of Hearthstone, or you need to go hop in there and play the game. You need to be able to do that kind of thing because I have all the stress in my life. Most of the 90% of the stress in my life is self-inflicted. It's my own. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I don't have people. I rarely have people coming to me. I do. Maybe every couple of weeks it might be an editor or somebody like this.
No,
like,
I think you're right because I would not have qualified it as a need, and I don't feel like in that moment I'm doing a good thing. I feel like I'm goofing around. But if you look at the system in general, there is kind of like this piddling weight state where it's like I try to be in a zen place so that the next fire that shows up, I'm ready to, you know, just pivot right into it, and I'm not freaking out. You know?
Yeah, I don't. I get the number of disasters that have to be solved that fall into my doorstep. They happen much more infrequently than you do. And so, and that makes it easier. I can plan for stuff. I can do this sort of stuff. And that means, but also means my stress level is nowhere near what yours probably is. And so,
well, yeah, I think for Brian, you have to stay at a certain level of center because that's just what your life is. You know, you can't go too far. Like you can't just disappear for 48 hours, into something away from your house.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's an element. That's something that you just need to do. Now, Bonnie is very flexible that you can, you know, leave at 48 hours notice to go do something if it needs to be done. But there's still an element that you got to stay at home for. And I would say for you, before you give yourself short shrift, I mean, I remember, you know, you telling me about how Scam School came together, and that was a large multi-step process that you know, there was a big deadline ahead of it. But you worked really hard. I mean, hell. You know, as much as I like to give you guff about it, like I know when you're preparing for something, like, you know, you have insane commitment and dedication to physical fitness and stuff like that. And like that to me is that's deep work, you know, that's commitment. Mm-hmm. That's a level that I think few people can really touch.
If it's getting done, and that's what I'll have discussions with people, like, you know, like, oh, so-and-so does this or whatever. I'm like, it's getting done. It's getting done. And I remember hearing about a magician, you know, and I'm not going to name him. I'd heard about, like, oh, they're always late to set. They do this. I'm like, listen, that's frustrating, whatever. But that the position of stress that he's in, that he's dealing with, that may be the only way that he copes with it, which I agree would be better if that wasn't the way that it was done. But if it's getting done, then
yeah.
That might be what it needs. And that's the thing you have. And that's one of the things you start to accommodate. Like, you know, you hear, you know, Steve Jobs, Mercurial CEOs and things like that. Like, if the results are working, that's fine. You know, Uber's going through this big thing right now. We're like, hey, no, we think we have a lot of structural problems. We've had great growth, but people are starting to hate us. We're this. And so they bring in Eric Holder to do like an internal report. Because, like, yeah, this part's working, this other part's not working. And we got along by saying we had great growth, but now we're at a point where it could collapse. If you weren't delivering the output you were, Brian, I'd say that's a problem. So I would say, again, my advice is step one for deep work is figure out what the goal is. What I do personally is I say, in 7 days, I'm going to have a novel, you know, and, you know, in 1 week, I'm going to be able to understand the rudimentary aspects of making an app, not a great app, but I will know all the things that I don't know that I need to know as far as what are the steps, what are the tools, what are that, and how to get the information to do that. So I set those goals for myself, and then I figure out how I apportion my time to do that. And I say, okay, what's realistic? You're like, oh, I'm going to work 24 hours straight and get this done. Not realistic. And when it comes to learning something, you can say, I'm going to spend all day learning it, but your brain needs time to stop and process. And while, you know, I look at a course that says, oh, it's 24 hours. I'm like, oh, I can be done with that in 2 days. Like, yes, I could watch every video, you know, and be done in, you know, 36 hours. The problem is my retention. I know my retention level won't be there, and I have to space that out,
right?
But not too much.
So you have to get hands-on with those pieces long enough that they enter automatic memory for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, or just to know enough to know that when I encounter this again, I'll remember how to find the answer to the problem, you know, that I'll know how to – and that's so much of coding is just like knowing where to look to find the answer and just knowing, like, I think I know what I'm looking at. Let me double check. But for any task, whatever it is, if you say, I want to do a podcast, you got to say, I need to spend X amount of hours to get this thing done, figure out, and maybe I only have an hour Monday to do this, and then I'll have 2 hours Tuesday to do this. You figure out what the task is, you divide the task to the time that you have in a realistic way, and then you start. Now, if you find out you're not getting it done, you stop and you analyze. I went through that with my writing. I had a period where I'm like, man, I'm not delivering it the same way that I want to, or I'm not having fun. I stepped back. Pulled out a notebook and I made a bunch of notes. What worked for me? What didn't? We're not introspective enough. We're not analytical enough about these processes. And when you are, in my own personal experience, it's made a humongous change in my life and I've become more efficient. So that's my advice. Figure out what it is, break down the time, analyze how you're using that time. And if one of those things isn't working out, reassess. But be aware that there are way, yes, there are way more distractions to us than there are before. As intelligent, creative people, we will create excuses for why we're doing the other thing, why it's okay to jump ship into this other project. It's the biggest problem being a creative is you're like, you know, this is a great idea, but what I really think this should be doing is the plan B is this. And how many times did you hear me tell you that, Justin?
I mean,
a lot.
A lot. Let's go ahead and leave it at a lot.
Yeah. And I still do that. Difference is things are getting delivered. Things are getting, you know, I have, yeah.
I think that the difference is that now, again, you know, I think you have had tremendous success because the biggest thing that you realize is that you do, you know, in a crude way, humanity is not the absence of progress, right? Like, you know, you have to understand how these ideas kind of rattle around with the world to get a better sense of where to drive this fantastic production engine in between your ears. And I think that a lot of that in part came from the validation of success in some of the work. But I think what drove it to another level was realizing like, all right, like now that things are kind of moving a little bit, let's understand closer to, you know, how do I not drive myself nuts? You know, how do I not leave chunks of me in the trail behind and realize that I'm not so much better for it?
You know, and one of the things that happens is when you train yourself to finish things, it becomes easier to finish things. And so question, Waffleogus asks, Andrew, when you say that you have 7 days to write a novel or something, how much time a day are you going to be writing to get writing at this point? Because I'm trying to juggle four massive things, which is getting in the way. Now, I'm going to say this. When you prioritize and you say, this is the thing I'm going to do, if you can get rid of those other obligations for that time period, then you get rid of those other obligations of the time period, because we will spend more time and more mental energy juggling and trying to deal with the guilt that something else isn't getting done than just doing the thing. I had a project where I promised some friends a script, and I had a month where I was going back and forth. I had to worry about the edits of a book, which didn't take a lot of time, but mentally I don't want to focus on one book while I'm trying to finish another or one story. That's one of my rules is I don't, and I know writers like, oh yeah, I'll start multiple stories. And it's like, all right, some people that works, but I know a lot of people that tell me this, they don't deliver, you know? And it's like me, I'm sequential. If I have an idea for a story, I pull out a notebook, I'll put my notes down and I put it away. I don't try to multitask back and forth, because it's not like I'm getting two things done at once. I'm getting two things done five times as slowly and crappily. So when it comes down to like 7 days, I knew I was planning on 2 weeks. I got sick. I lost a week, but I just figured out like, oh, it's been two or three days was just writing an outline, you know, and then diving into it. You figure out how much time you have. You have to, you know, I don't know how many words can you write per hour. I don't write in a, you know, when I'm writing in a competent level, I can write a lot of words per hour, but it'll be sloppy and messy. But if I feel comfortable writing, you know, 2000 words an hour, I feel is a good pace for me. You know, I'm not too stressed, whatever, 2000 words an hour is a good pace for me. So I know that if I have a good outline, it means that I've got to spend, you know, 40 hours writing. So if I'm sitting down that line, so I know I got to spend 40 hours writing at 2000 words per hour. And if I have a week, I can either spend, you know, just 5 days at 8 hours, or more likely I'll spend, you know, 10 hours a day, but I'll break it up into 3 hour chunks, you know, and then that's how I do it. How much time do I have? How many words per hour?
But here's something that also that I don't want to get lost, especially with the writing example, was, you know, watching as you very much shaped your life around writing for a period of time. What also changed was the prep and getting better at outlining, making sure that you're constantly reading books on writing and figuring out exactly what you did, being very self-critical and analyzing stories that you had just written, right? And having ideas on what was going forward and identifying franchise elements and where you could go with larger stories, but also being restrictive on like, okay, well, I want to do this right now. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to get distracted. There was so much of the anxiety, I think, on large things comes from our constant what's next. And really, to me, what experience is knowing what's next, is knowing, okay, well, I do this and then I do this and then I do that. And that's my pathway through this project. But if I can optimize step one and step two, then it'll be better. But not wondering, I'm at step two. I wonder if this is step three.
Right. The pre-work is super, super critical. And I'll give you an example of like, I'll tell people like, hey, I want to do a website. I'm like, well, if you just want an easy website that looks good, use Squarespace. And people go like, they'll come back like, oh, I tried. And it's like, okay, here's my advice now for people. Before you even open up Squarespace, I want you to get a folder on your desktop and I want you to put in all the images you want to use. Just collect images. Look for images, headshots, close-up shots, what product shots, whatever you want to do. Put together all the images that you're going to want to use first, because when you dive into then text, write an about text, who you are. Write a text of what you have before you even open up the software to put this thing together, because it's essentially a layout tool. It's a tool for laying things out. And if you don't have things to lay out, you won't know what to do and you're going to get frustrated and angry. Same with Photoshop. When I talk to people about book covers and stuff, before I open up Photoshop, I have a sketch of what I want to do. I've already grabbed all the elements. It's a composition tool. Photoshop, for me, I use it just for compositing stuff, which means I need to have these images first. They may not be the ones I end up with. People fail because they go into there and they're confronted with the question that they don't have an answer to and they weren't prepared for. They thought, I'm going to create, like, yeah, but you need this thing. Now you got to go find that thing that you didn't realize you need. When I write a book, I need to have a character. I need to have a plot. I need to have all these little things laid out for me. So when I sit in front of the computer screen, I'm not going, okay, now what? It's like it's like the same as opening up Photoshop going, I know I want to cover. What do I want to do? If I'm trying to play with that in Photoshop, I'm going to fail versus if I sat down with a notebook and made a bunch of notes about, I want the cover to look like this and do this and this and this. So,
I mean, it is fascinating to watch. We're just now to the point where we're finalizing the design for Action News and watching Meg and Fawn of Guts and Glory, who are our designers, work on that. Is just like that process is something that is really, really fascinating. And part of it is exactly what Andrew's saying. You know, they are pulling and they are designing, you know, right from scratch. Like, but they pull references from everything. And they are constantly finding, you know, what's the visual thread here? What do we want to accomplish? How are we looking to do it? What is everything has a purpose? And especially for something like this, where we're being evocative of designs from the 70s and 80s specifically, you have to understand, like, okay, well, how do you do this, but not make it a ripoff, but also make it forward and new and modern looking, you know? And there's so much that goes into it, but so much of it is pre-work. So much of it is just understanding exactly what you want to do and then doing that a million times.
And the thing about pre-work, which is fascinating, is it can get to a point where you're not even aware of it. Now, it was my problem listening to a number of authors talk, like established ones, is they forgot the things that they got intuitively now that they didn't initially and why they couldn't give advice to a beginner. When Brian, every week, Brian puts together two broadcast quality shows, Scam School, Modern Rogue, and they are broadcast quality. I will fight anybody who says that they're not. They absolutely are. Nobody's not the name of saying that. They're broadcast quality shows. Every week he delivers two broadcast quality shows. Brian and team
Of course is the royal Brian.
Yeah, that's
yeah, and I'm
yeah,
saying let's... Brian and his team have. They know what this is. They know what these things are. So Brian knows, kind of has an intuitive idea of, well, Scam School episode is this. He doesn't have to go jump through all the stages of outlining and stuff like that maybe he did when he was planning years ago. Brian brings in team members and he says, I'm going to put this knowledge into your head, or you're going to do this and you're going to expand on it and you're going to build it. And it is so much of what they do, they don't even have to sit down and notebook and document it because they know that. Justin does – how many hours of extemporaneous talking do you do a week in podcasts?
Close to four. Four?
4 hours a week. You do 4 hours a week of you on a microphone with content and no dead spots, we hope, going through continuously, okay? That came from you spending years of studying people who did that and saying, okay. And we would make jokes. You know, he and I would used to make jokes because we talk about like our admiration for the skill. Let me emphasize the skill of Rush Limbaugh, because this guy would hop on the microphones every day and he'd have these little – On my previously nicotine-stained fingers, I have here a thing I'm going to read for you. And this is going, and he, like, the way he could do is lead up and get into it and have, he would, every now and then he'd say something to Mr. Snerdly, but his conversation with himself was fascinating because it was just Howard Stern's an incredible broadcaster, but Limbaugh, the ability, that audience size for one guy, you know, forget the content, people. Get past the content.
In what is a torturous format. Yeah. Like, the amount of ads that they jam into that show. That was always my biggest thing. It's like, how does anybody listen to this, like, 5 second at a time minisode between an ad read that is four times as long? Like, you just want, it's actively chasing you away with billboards, and yet it's still so well listened to because, you know, a one mic person can kind of create that voice in your head sort of journey.
So these are skills you and Brian both had to. There was a lot of work over a lot of time, and some of it was background processing. You didn't know what you were doing, but you were just acquiring those skills. But then now the pre-work is easy. You know, for me, my pre-work on a novel is much easier than it used to be because I learned those things. And that's one of the advantages of once you understand what you're trying to do, how you're going to get those skills to do it, it becomes easier.
Right.
You know, and the work is still there, but it becomes you don't have to think as much about the other parts.
So for my pick, I'm going to do it again. But I would say the thing I've read the most that would be the most conducive to creating those deep work environments is The One Thing. It's currently blowing up the charts. I think it's like number one bestseller right now.
Nice.
By Gary Keller. It's pretty good.
Very cool.
My pick, of course, is going to be Scam School, airing on Science Channel June 24th. At 8 a.m., two episodes, a back-to-back rock block, 8 a.m. and 8:30. That is, of course, on the Science Channel, June 24th. If you have not set your DVR, honestly, like, why are you spitting in all of our faces at once? Like, this is a personal offense if you are not. Don't say, don't worry, I'll do it. Stop badgering me. I'm badgering you until you, okay, finally I'll stop because you just did it. Thank you.
My pick is the Black Panther trailer.
Ha!
Black Panther trailer dropped, and it looks amazing. I hope the movie's as good as that is, but Coogler, who is the director of Creed, is an amazing director. Creed was a fantastic movie, and that he got to go in and take over the Black Panther character is amazing and awesome. I thought that we saw, you know, I've talked a bit about Wonder Woman before and as how it was directed by Patty Jenkins. I thought it was really, really well done. The characters are great. And I think that choosing these people who aren't necessarily known for visual effects movies and having them do character stuff, I think could be maybe a good idea. So,
I think it's rad. I love the idea that they turned Wakanda closer to Asgard than New York City. You know, it is just a great idea. And already in that little opening tete-a-tete, it's already better than those two actors' performance in the Hobbit movie. So I'm already excited.
It's true. Chad Boseman and Michael B. Jordan, they could have been better. They could have, in those movies.
Yeah, no. I mean, we haven't really heard a lot of the dialogue or any sense of the story. And you want to know what? I really dig the fact that between this, Ragnarok, and Guardians 2, it seems like the future of Marvel is in this, like, very colorful, very kind of almost not psychedelic in the sense that, it's crazy and trippy or anything, but certainly very... spectrum of colors in a way that I wonder whether or not that's like a reaction either to their own movies or just how how in their own format blockbuster films have been. But as we come into Wakanda, we just see like all these crazy colors and shapes and everything. And I think that's super rad.
But still kind of gritty and cool when it needs to be, which I dug about the Captain America films.
Yeah, totally.
You know, super, super stoked. So, hey, if you guys have any questions, you want us to tackle a business idea or thing that you want to do, and we'll give you our opinion on it. We're not saying it's a good opinion, but we'll give it to you. That's what After Things is for. And use special code AfterThings, and you'll get absolutely nothing.
But if you have a question, email it to neshcom@gmail.com with afterthings in the subject line.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.